Any questions or anything to say?
Yes. I'm a little bit confused about the word doorkeeper.
Mm-hmm.
In the context that we've been speaking about it, I cannot really see it as a doorkeeper.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wonder,
good.
Is that really the word? Or
yeah, yeah.
Yeah?
I didn't make that one up. Could you hear? It might be better to come closer, but we can also, as you like. She said she's confused, curious about the word doorkeeper, if that's really what the text said or my poetic, like, interpretation of something else. So yeah, it's doorkeeper. And even more interesting is that the recommendation is to make it your food, to make the doorkeepers your food. So it's bizarre. It's bizarre. But if we think about us and our world and how our world is when we're caught up in worries or whatever. And we have this week the chance unexpectedly to have another perspective through Melanie's death, to get a sense sometimes of how we're caught up and how we might be not caught up. how it might be possible to be not caught up, and what that might be. What would be the burden that isn't? And so if we could maybe make a little bit simplistic and call it like two worlds or something like that. So we get caught up, but there's also this bigger life that we can feel. Is that okay to say it that way? And so our receptivity to the bigger world. Can you hear me, Monique? Yeah? Okay. Just like wave if you don't. Okay. So it's a lot about our receptivity, or how we can bridge the two. Yeah? The world as we usually know it, and the world as we know it. And so for me, this is the doorkeeper thing, like the bridge, the entrance between the two worlds, so to speak.
So you see, like,
wait.
Okay.
An image that I like, that comes to mind, that feels juicy, is, because I'm turned on by biology, even though I know very little, I find it amazing. And so I don't know much, so please tell me if you know it better or whatever, or we take it as more metaphorical. But apparently inside each of our cells, yeah, cells, inside each of them, there's the cell wall, and there's the liquid, whatever, plasma or whatever it is, and there's the nucleus. So there's like the little headquarters or whatever, the little central or ball inside the cell, okay? And things come in and out of the cell wall, and they also get escorted inside the nucleus and back out. So it's a wall, and something can cross through it when the chemistry is right. And something can even, and must even, cross into the nucleus and must be able to cross out. So it's a wall, there's a barrier that must be crossed for life to continue. Otherwise it's stagnation, otherwise it would be that, like when we only breathe in, the breath has to come out. The cells also have to breathe, they have to circulate the nutrition, etc., and the communication. And so I saw, it's like, using, I think, electrons, they make an impression of the shape of the cells and the nucleus of the cells. And it's, first of all, very, very beautiful, I find. And nuts, the shapes are can remind us even of very primitive art, where it's just an oval, or just a circle, or a circle on an oval. And it somehow, before the mind kicks in, has a flash of meaning somehow. So I just wanted to say, for me, it's also beautiful. But certainly it's amazing that there's in the wall something whose function, its job, is to bring what needs to go in by hooking together in just the right way, and then it can come, the door opens, a pore opens, and it can pass through, but it has to be just the right shape. And there are different doors for this shape and that, this size and that size. Through the chemistry, it opens, can pass through and close. So there's something that can happen when we're together in a way that's helpful, in ways that are helpful. Let's not say, oh, there's the one way, but in the ways that may be helpful, there's something that can happen that's alive in another way, that can allow crossing, that can allow door opening just the right size for just what needs to come in or out. So connection, so this connecting principle. So one way I would like to talk about it today is, often when we're busy with our little lives, which means the ways my hurt is bringing more hurt, the bull pulling the cart. So it's not easy to get out of that, because I feel hurt. So I really experience I must protect the hurt. And I'm just protecting the hurt when I am angry at you because you do something that I was told not to do or whatever. It's hard to notice when I'm protective that I'm hurting. So it's hard to come out of that, but we do, and we can, and we can learn that it works much better. And that what we're protecting isn't also, and it doesn't protect also. So, but it's hard to learn that. It's hard to really accept that when I'm feeling hurt, I'm likely to be hurting if I'm really letting the hurt take over and coming from the hurt. And that it's okay that that happens again and again, because it will and it does. But it doesn't have to. When we're in our little lives, I would like to talk metaphorically about chemistry, and chemistry was not my, I got the worst grade of my life in chemistry. I thought I was doing really well then. But let's just say, using chemistry as an inspiration, that there could be two kinds of chemistry among us, or at least. So one kind is when we're caught up. We have a certain kind of receptivity, so as if the molecule or whatever has a certain kind of shape. And that shape has to hook up and does hook up with that shape of the other molecule. And so they have that kind of interaction, they make that kind of chemical compound, that kind of poison is made. It happens. And when we don't allow what we usually call chemistry, so our first impression of someone that ends up being our lasting impression of them. We apparently, like within seconds, there's something that happens beyond our control from our conditioning, from our past, that we feel more open to someone, or we feel closed to them, we feel afraid of them, we feel better than them, we feel worse than them, we feel whatever. And that tends to last, and it tends to guide our interactions. That's called chemistry. So if we get into our usual shapes, then chemistry happens. We like and we don't like, and we don't find our way out of that shape. We don't find our way out of that. The molecules lock together in a shape that is poisonous. let's say, or that is a particular shape, and therefore acts in a particular way. So we get into a dynamic, and it's how to, it seems to be not me, I can't get out, whatever. We try to figure it out and work on it and everything, but the chemistry keeps happening. When we find ways of, okay, that shape is there, but that's not all, there is a big life. There are big lives, not only mine. I can tune and feel or remember or whatever sense the whisper of my other life and your other life. And it can allow alchemy, let's say, or another kind of chemistry. It's a different shape. And it can be that it unlocks the door. And so I would like to say that it's not doorkeeper necessarily to go from one to the other, but doorkeeper to unlock so that there is connecting principle, that there is not two. It's open. Yeah. How is that non-chemist chemistry? Lani Ji.
I was just going to say sometimes, though, I mean.
A little loudly?
Oh, okay. Sometimes, though, we do these things and then something else happens.
We do which things?
We develop these habits,
yeah.
These perspectives, these ways of seeing, and something happens to me.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
yep.
And I see something. I mean, it happens all the time.
Yep.
I think I see something that, oh. And then I can see, you know, the change. I can see the error.
Yes, good.
Mm. And I got that wrong.
Good.
Or, you know, maybe I'll do a little bit of analysis in my own head.
Yeah.
Well, that's because my mom.
Yeah. And that helps us accept that where we get it wrong is not our fault. It happened. And we accepted, and we go along with it. But it's not my wrong. So that's great. Yes. Very clear. So that's good that we don't let this simplistic image be too simplistic. That even when chemistry is happening, that little life chemistry is happening, the big life still sometimes does alchemy, so to say.
But that's mostly mental, though, isn't it?
I think honesty in the way that you're describing it is not purely mental. There's a realization that comes, that can come up to conscious recognition. It sounds like to me when you're describing it. Mm. It sounds like to me that your development of loving kindness and Tonglen practice over the years and facing what comes into your mind that you don't like, etc., and trying this and trying that, but your continuity of practice over years helps honesty happen and allows that conflict that Krishnamurti spoke of that can work towards doorkeeper, the first doorkeeper. That honesty is, that's resonating with first doorkeeper. I got it wrong. Yes. You raised your hand.
Yeah. I just was wondering if both small lives or both participants in the chemistry need to be open to their own big lives for the change.
What's your experience?
No.
Sometimes it helps a lot when one person feels the potential of alchemy. That person that there's friction with could one day be my best friend. That can help, but it doesn't necessarily help also. But it certainly helps for for one of the people. also, okay, now I'm talking a lot about being together with each other in terms of the fourth doorkeeper of satsang, being together, alchemy. And also, so there's the fourth doorkeeper that I called alchemy, and we're also remembering that each of the doorkeepers are a kind of alchemy, a kind of bridging of visible, invisible, formless form. So if we can have those kind of two layers of meaning. So, but that it's not only about each other either. Also about mind state, me and my mind state, and then not two. Through the help of honesty that arose from your lifetime of practice, I would say. So thank you for your lifetime of practice. Someone over here was Mitraji, yeah.
There's this concept of opening up, and from the small mouth to the big mouth.
Yeah.
Or when you go through that protective mood.
Yeah.
And always it's really hard for me to apply. But I just wonder if you can give us an example, a practical example.
So Lenny just gave one, Lenny G.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's honesty. There are also other ways that we're locked in chemistry, and then life experience comes, and something funny happens, or, and then we unlock. So many different ways it can unlock also. And this is part of your work, is to feel what helps your receptivity to alchemy. You should feel your way. So remember in Australia we talked about blindly feeling down and not trying to see it or get it from here first. That will come probably later, if at all. If at all. Also, we work with the negative to some extent, but if we are only working with the negative, how it hurts, and then what can I do to make it better, it's not enough. And so I would ask, like, consider 80% of your practice is feeling for the whispers of, what are the whispers of alchemy for you? Where there's a whisper of joy, a whisper of belonging, a whisper of love, a whisper of clarity, honesty. What are the whispers? And gradually, and it starts to come. So there's a man named Joe Jaworski who talks a lot about synchronicity. And he noticed it's interesting, I just want to pause and mention a little bit about him. He was the son of a very famous lawyer in the United States who did the Watergate papers, which is, it doesn't matter, but one of the biggest scandals until recent history, until we got more and more scandals. The lawyer who did the Watergate trial. If you've heard of Watergate, then you know what it is. If not, it was this huge scandal with lying that was discovered by the president and all around him lying, and it was taped and discovered. And so he was that lawyer. The son, Joe, was also so raised in that environment, intellect, working with big companies and this kind of thing. But he discovered his own way through his life experience, as I understand. So he found what makes him receptive, maybe not so much through meditation, but by noticing synchronicity, for example. And he said that what he really noticed is that when he started to notice there was another way of living that was fulfillment, even in this life with his wife and his children building a huge house in Houston, Texas, and then flying off to London to work for Shell and whatever, he said that we cross a threshold of commitment and things fall into place. So that crossing the threshold of commitment, the doorkeeper, it's not something we can make ourselves do, but we notice what calls us, what would call us if we let it. And then we start to let it, we start to let it, we start to let it. And if we were just remember that, the barefoot thing where should I do this or that, or maybe my meditation is good or maybe not, and then like meditation. I was so happy on a retreat last summer. A really wonderful man who's done a lot of meditation practice and a lot of satsang practice and very clear and very good mind as well, good at expressing his experience. And he came in an interview to me and he said something like, F Dharma. Like, and it was, he felt, it was so important that he said that to me. It was so important. That was the most important thing on the week retreat or whatever. That, the shoes and the umbrella. What? If I meditation and non-meditation and satsang and non-satsang and guru's grace and non-guru's grace and baby and not baby, what? But it's not always like that kind of what. We have also this softening where, more often, the softening where we're nearly asleep or we just woke up or we don't know where we are, lying down, meditation. And there's this very like subtle kind of suggestion of another way that's like silkiness, it has, and we say, oh, maybe later, or it when no one's looking, or when I do this right, then I will, after the retreat. And so recognizing that movement of later, not me, maybe someone else will. When I see someone else doing it, then I'll. But just recognizing that moment that we feel that it's silly. We've never seen anyone else. That can't be enough. But we let that speak to us. We let that soften us. We let life experience shock us sometimes so that we don't want the options. What? It can be sometimes like, so I may never ever meditate. What is meditation anyway? I may never, how do I know if I'm meditating? So what? Then, okay, relax. What comes next is your way. And so don't dismiss it. Don't say later on. But stay with that. Also don't say, this is it. Only like this. But let that teach you. I'm going to say learn you. Let that organically express, unfold in ways that will surprise you and us. And people will question you sometimes. And you don't know, but you have this trickle of trust, like tiny little, usually tiny little. Hardly enough, but enough. I may be wrong, but even. What else can I? So that's commitment. That's what Joe Jaworski. It's not commitment like this is the new year 2013, so I commit to before my fellow retreatants that we know is like maximum 7 days, you know. So while we're busy making those commitments, let's leave room for this other trickle of commitment, of what else? Are there any questions or comments?
I got to understand the vairagya in a way with your playfulness. That walk was like mind blowing. How would you translate the requirement that sometimes is much asked for in the spiritual path of renunciation into real world, and if it's already in one of the doorkeepers, which I think
that is normally it would be translated renunciation. And it's good that it's perfect timing to bring that up, because about commitment and renunciation. We try to renounce, we try to commit, and it doesn't work. We stay with our experience, not knowing what's right and wrong. Therefore, what else to do but play, and in action, let honesty happen. So through honesty, whatever way I can notice, I got it wrong, or getting wrong happened, or whatever. And then it dissolves through honesty. And then it's not there. It's not that I gave it up. It's gone. For me, it's gone. It's maybe not gone for someone else, but, and I don't mean me, I mean for one, it's gone. It's not like I'm trying to give up smoking, or I'm trying to give up speaking this week, but I love silence so much that even if sometimes speaking happens, I'm true to silence. And because I'm true to silence, I may speak true to silence, or I may speak and find error, or I might stay silent and find, I got it wrong. That's not silence. Speaking would have been silence. And so a deeper love of silence, renunciation of the concept of silence, and giving ourselves in, like, the trust of ourselves, in ourselves, of that love of silence, or whatever, love of silkiness, joy, resting, restfulness, communication about what's important, or what moves you, what moves us. Is that clear enough? Yeah, great, thank you. Good timing.
This is very intuitive. So that trickle of trust that you're talking about?
If you speak more loudly, they can hear your voice.
So the trickle of trust,
yeah,
that you're talking about, most days, I feel it like a roaring stream. And I really feel that commitment that makes itself. There's no me deciding.
Yeah.
But then I witness myself making the plans and thinking that I've figured it out, or this is the Zendo I need to go to, or when I leap onto what presents itself. So like a few days ago, I just woke up with this urge, this just like burning reality of, I have to shave my head. It was like, right now, like that. But then it sort of came into, I was like, and then what will it be like when I have my shaved head? Or like, how will people react? So it became this idea of it. And I continuously found myself doing this. And then coming back and laughing. And
good.
Then there's the trickle again.
Yeah.
And then it.
Yeah.
So it's not a question.
No, it's good. Yeah. Thank you.
Ramana says, in one situation, if renunciation was destined, there would be no question.
If renunciation were destined, there would be no question. Yeah. Could you hear the earlier part of what Solomon was saying? No. Shall I try and you tell me if I heard you?
You can do it, yeah.
Because I'm facing them. Or you can turn around and tell them.
No, please.
He says, I feel not so much trickle, but more like roaring river of trust, often. Yeah, often. And then something from the roaring river comes, like a few days ago. He woke up, or it came, clarity, I need to shave my head. Head must be shaved. And then that came up started to add on and become story of how it will be and people will react and so on. And then also it didn't happen because we're on retreat. And we didn't arrange barber. And then luckily, trickle of trust, steadily trickling, and then again roaring. And then he said, it's not really a question, but it fits. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Correct. And then again, Ramanas, if
renunciation was destined, there would be no question.
No question.
Renunciation.
Renunciation. It's the word I was avoiding saying the whole time. Renouncing, it would be like,
surrender.
I renounce. Well, it's the two things. Yeah, German. Okay. But it would be, normally we hear renunciation to say, I, with my will, renounce whatever. I renounce chai, and so I will not drink chai. That's how we usually take it, as a willful act. And then there's the possibility that the actual happening of renunciation is renunciation. Excuse me, sometimes it comes over me. Is what I was calling playfulness, honesty, that Krishnamurti conflict in action, mindfulness in action, so that learning comes through. And then it's an active mindfulness. It's not mindfulness like da 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 and then this and that story, but it has an active quality, like it's a total, because I'm not against anything like that I might see, because I don't know what's right or wrong. So I'm not against anger when it comes, let's say. And so there's playfulness with anger, but that still shows where the mind got it wrong. Not right, wrong, but it's not true. It's not wrong about me. And then the conflict happens. So it's not that I gave up the anger or I dissolved the anger, but yes, Lila.
Can you say something more about making the doorkeeper as your food?
About, could I say more about making the doorkeeper as your food? I get a good feeling about this image of the cellular walls and making the doorkeepers our food. Because it's not like a door that we knock at and someone else opens. We come into intimate contact with something that ends up causing an opening to happen so that we can go through. And the doorkeeper stays at the door and we're inside. And so it's like that bigger life that's not, it's that also not knocking on our door and saying, come on, come in. Whenever you're ready. Whenever you want, kind of want. And so something else is needed for that opening, for that two worlds that are not two, to be experienced as not two. And so this importance of the alchemy that can happen with the help of each other's. lifetime of practice. And with the help of our own honesty, ordinariness, playfulness, and leaving room for the unexpected, the out of character, so that we do something and we feel we've been disloyal to ourselves. I don't do that. And to be glad, and again, we get the feeling of that when something happens that's not what we would usually do, so that when what spontaneously happens is what we would normally do, we also still have the freshness. So there's not a rule, there's following the freshness or letting the freshness lead. Yeah? What more? No. Anything more? Or shall we have 5 minutes? Yeah?
It sounds a little bit as if they are linear, like first you have the first one and then the second and then the third.
And then the fourth?
Yeah. You know that if you have playfulness, then you're ready for the next step, and then you can do ordinariness.
Right. This week I'm feeling them as being connected in that way, but it's said in the text that best, all four, fine, one, two, three, anything, whatever helps. And just another word about the it being our food, like also the way it's not a thinking process, but another kind of process. And then that is what we're made of. And then we're built of that. That's how I take it today, like to make it my food. And then I just wanted to, again, repeat what I said such a long time ago, 8 or 9 days ago, 8 or 9 lifetimes ago, that it's not necessarily true, accurate Sanskrit analysis of the word ahar for food. I don't know if it's ahar, ahar, or ahar, because I only see the English in my mind, A-H-A-R. I don't see the Sanskrit word, and I haven't had time to look it up. So, but the possibility of what if that word food, ahar, so had like shakahari, mansahari, if you know Hindi, vegetarian, plant eating, meat eating, hari is to eater. If ahar, food, is like the not lack, so the not hunger. So don't take it as real good Sanskrit, but just what if it is. That it's food because it's the not hunger, the not something missing, the enough, the more than enough. And that we let that fill our own being. Why don't we share 5 minutes together quietly?